Greetings. Greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. That's right, it's the Weekly Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. Welcome back. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors. But we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And this week, we're going to start with big tech, big media, big evil. Big evil. Yeah. That's right. We're going to start with Google. I have a report here from the Liberty Daily alleging, now this is only alleged, that Google has interfered with elections 41 times over the past 16 years. And then they go through a long list of every time the leftists at Google have slanted information via search results in order to favor leftist candidates. And there's quite the long list. I won't link to it because I don't want you to waste as much time as I did on this story. But we all should realize that a company that has to hang a giant sign with letters the size of a human being at their headquarters, a sign that says, don't be evil. They have that hanging in the lobby at their corporate headquarters. Giant sign. That should be a red flag. Only someone being evil would hang a giant sign in the lobby that says, don't be evil. Because if you're not doing that, you wouldn't think to tell everyone that you're not doing that. It's like the people insisting that they're being transparent because our concern is first for you and others. It's like those people. I don't believe you. And everyone at Google, by the way, I think they've been evil since they first started getting high in college thinking about Google. And then ever since all of the people at the very top upper echelon in the C ring there at Google headquarters, everyone in the executive suites, ever since they all got rich enough to destroy the company, destroy everything, and still die with millions of dollars left in their bank account. Ever since they all got that rich, there's been very little restraining their evil. Google is a monument to America's fall from grace. The very thing that opened the door to knowledge that would revolutionize the world. Can you imagine 50 years ago, the idea that you could have all the compiled information of all of humanity at your fingertips by just searching a few key words. It was, you told someone that 50 years ago, they would say, wow, that'll revolutionize everything. Everything will be better after that. So this thing that Google did that would revolutionize the world, instead, It'll destroy the world because their deeds were evil. Don't be evil. Google is evil. And they're just the most evil, the most obvious evil. We'll get to some more because there's plenty of it creeping around, slinking around, lurking in plain sight, all around, telling us they're transparent and they're not evil. And that they're affirming all of those words. Just be suspicious by default when you hear things like that. That's my advice. Speaking of evil, we go to the Queering of America file, where we have a report on cheating in New York State. That's right. Cheating in New York, according to WFIN.com, which is a news outlet there in New York, WFIN. Cheating in New York is technically illegal, they say, under a law enacted in 1907. That's right. In the state of New York, a law passed in 1907 making adultery a misdemeanor punishable by up to 3 months behind bars. And the reporters at WFIN, along with a New York legislator, a lawyer, They were shocked to find a law against adultery still on the books in the state of New York. And so the Democrat legislator, of course, is working furiously to repeal the law.
Why? Again, it doesn't matter.
Ask his wife. His wife's probably like, why? His wife must be wondering why. If he has a wife. I should have done some research and found out about Assemblyman Charles Levine. Charles Levine, who comes from a cultural, comes from a culture where adultery was illegal. Levine. That's right. Yeah. Originally, with all the Levines, adultery was known to be illegal, at least according to the law. But Charles Levine, who I did not do any research on because you can only waste so much time on these stories and drive yourself insane. By the way, I looked at the laws on adultery in the United States in the 1800s. And this law in New York, passed in 1907, was actually watering down the laws against adultery that existed in New York before 1907. This was just to make it a misdemeanor. It used to be a far more serious crime in New York, and it was the undergirding of the fault divorce laws that if someone cheated on you, you could sue for divorce in New York. And anyway, Chuck Levine says that having a law on the books against adultery, he says, quote, it's a joke, unquote, which in New York, it kind of is a joke because they have no fault divorce in New York, which means you can sue for divorce for no reason whatsoever, demand half of your spouse's stuff and get it and just walk away. So it's a joke in that respect. But Levine is working to have the misdemeanor law against adultery repealed. The law was nearly removed in the 1960s. However, one politician argued that if we were to repeal the law against adultery, it might appear like the state was endorsing infidelity. And because he said that, all the lawmakers in the 1960s, they had some shame and they were like, well, we don't want to look like we're endorsing infidelity. And they left the law in the books because they had some shame. Fast forward to 2024. Now they just do it. It's obvious. They have no shame. Why would we keep a law against anything considered immoral on the books? You got a pile of faggots and child molesters and fornicators up there. They can't even comprehend something as straightforward as a law against adultery. They don't even know what adultery is. None of them are getting married anymore. They're just all bar hopping and adultery? What is that? So that's New York. So this is from the Queering of America file, because the queers and the trannies and all the freaks, they could have never made the inroads they have had the normal people not thrown marriage overboard and made adultery legal. Had the normal people had the good sense not to commit adultery and to make sure that it was against the law to commit adultery, we wouldn't have people trying to mutilate children in the schools and the whole just the insanity of it all. Whose fault is it? It's the normal people's fault. It's our fault that we let this happen. Our fault, I say, I guess it would be my grandparents, so who allowed adultery to be decriminalized starting back in the 60s. Very sad. And so that all led to the Queering of America, which continues unabated, or at least somewhat abated, possibly abated. Megyn Kelly. Does anyone remember Megyn Kelly? I didn't. I recognized the name, but I couldn't remember who she was. I had to look her up, and then I remembered, oh, yeah, I remember her. The one who looks like a stripper on Fox News. I remember. Megyn Kelly has issued an apology for words and actions she took as an innocent young 47-year-old reporter who simply didn't know. In 2018, Kelly admits, while on the conservative Fox News network, she admits that she led the audience in cheering for trans people. She says, I used to use approved terms like gender-affirming care and cis to refer to natural-born women and men. But I was an innocent young 47-year-old reporter. What did I know? It was 2018. She says that at the time, in her innocence, she smiled and listened politely, and she says she wanted to be supportive of those who were suffering. And she said she didn't see the harm in using terms like gender-affirming care, calling normal people cis people. Megyn Kelly now says that her heart was in the right place. She says, I wasn't trying to push anything bad on kids. I thought I was promoting anti-bullying. But now, says Megyn Kelly, I just have such regret about it. She now says, if you're not actively fighting against this, you're part of the problem. Thank heaven, Megyn Kelly. She comes out and she is repentant over her sin of going along with the whole trans freak cult. The adultery, she was never for adultery outright. I mean, she would have never supported laws against her or anything like that. She's not an extremist or a fundamentalist. But the whole trans thing is just a bridge too far for Megyn. And she realizes now that as a young 47-year-old reporter, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, she was taken advantage of in her ignorance, not realizing the damage that she was doing. And now she says she was part of the problem. She says, don't be lured into thinking it's empathetic to support this radical experimentation on minors. On minors, she says. What does that mean? That means that Megyn Kelly still doesn't understand. Megyn Kelly would sit down and interview Bruce Jenner and call him her through the whole interview. She would do that. In fact, I predict she will do that. Yeah, if given the opportunity. No, I just predict she will. In the not too distant future, Megyn Kelly will interview Bruce Jenner and she'll act like he's a woman. Megyn, I'm glad you're repentant. Now, could you now just actually have an appropriate amount of shame and just resign and disappear? Resign and disappear. If you were so ignorant and naive as a 47-year-old adult to have been lured into thinking that it was empathetic to support and advocate the mutilation of mentally disturbed children. And by the way, Megyn, what about the adults? What about Bruce Jenner? Megyn Kelly will never tell Bruce Jenner, Bruce, you got to come back, man. What happened? Stop it. Are you okay? You need help, Bruce. You need the Lord. Bruce, let me try to help. She'll never say that, because she still doesn't know. And this is as close to repentance as the mainstream conservative talking head media is willing to get. And the only reason Megyn has come this way is because, having lost her gig at Fox, she's trying now to build an audience on whatever medium she's on, internet, YouTube, whatever it is. I don't really know. I hadn't been following her career. But whatever audience she's trying to build, she now realizes that it's in her interest to say that she's against transitioning children, especially without their parents' consent. And so Megyn is repentant, but only in her own interest. And for that, well, I guess you're thankful for any amount of repentance. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. It's good to have you with us. Thank you. It is, as we go forward into another week, let's go deeper into the politics file, where I had suspicions about this that started developing this week, and now I'm certain about it. Representative in the House of Representatives, Mike Gallagher, is resigning. Another Republican is resigning, meaning the Republican Party has less of a majority now, and by the end of next week, they might be down to one. Why is Mike Gallagher resigning? Remember, we had Ken Buck resign. Obviously, because someone has video of him with a, well, who knows? We'll just leave that aside. Whatever they got on Ken Buck. Now, Mike Gallagher, another Republican, he's resigning, says, after conversations with my family, I've made the decision to resign. Sure, Mike. He should have said, you know, after conversations with the family, I've made the decision to resign. That would be more believable. So why is Mike Gallagher resigning? It is because it seems to me there's a plot afoot to turn the House of Representatives over to the Democrats before the election in November. Why? So they can pass a law against Donald Trump being president, which they will do. Mike Gallagher says, I work closely with House Republican leadership on the time frame of my resignation. You know, before I found myself stuffed into a 55-gallon drum, if you know what I mean. So they give the House to the Democrats. The Democrats pass a law against Donald Trump being president, and then everyone is happy at the top of both parties. So, and by the way, it's not about Donald Trump being a conservative, because he isn't. It's not about Donald Trump being a Christian, because he isn't. I think that this comes down to something as simple as there are important funding sources and flows established for a century or more that run right through the White House. And Donald Trump just simply doesn't understand how to play ball on those revenue sources, that revenue that flows to the powers that be. It's not that he wants to drain the swamp. It's that he doesn't know how to facilitate the flow of the swamp, and they need someone who knows all that. And Don doesn't know because he is genuinely an outsider. So he doesn't understand how to play ball in there. He's not a member of the political establishment. That's simple, and he's not going to, they're just not going to let him be president. That's all. They're not going to let him be president. And it's not because they're afraid he's going to save America. He just doesn't understand. He doesn't understand the currents in the swamp. And he doesn't know how to ride the currents and facilitate the currents toward the current destruction that... I mean, that's Barack Obama's specialty. Now, Barack Obama was good at it. He was good at it. In fact, he's so good at it that he's able to do it even after he's out of the White House. And so that's, we shall see if the new majority in Congress, which if all goes according to plan, the Democrats should have a majority in Congress before September. And to be able to pass a law against Donald Trump, and then Mitch McConnell and the Republicans in the Senate will sign it. It'll go to the president's desk, and they will outlaw Donald Trump being president of the United States. And so... what does it matter to us in the long view and the big picture? Not all that much, but I just wanted to let you know that these are my sneaking suspicions as compromised Republicans continue to resign under somewhat weird circumstance. That's all. At least none of them have ended up dead, thank heaven. That'd be the last thing we'd want to see. All right. Now, speaking of speaking of people ending up dead, we go to the war file where we have a story from the Moscow Times, France, they say, at the Moscow Times. France is gearing up to send 2,000 of its soldiers into Ukraine. This is according to the head of foreign intelligence in Russia, Sergei Naryshkin. Sergei Naryshkin. He says he knows that the French are planning to send 2,000 soldiers. The Russian intelligence chief made this statement on the same day that General Pierre Schill, the chief of staff of the French land forces, said that the French army stands ready for the toughest engagements. The toughest engagements, the French army. Meaning the French soldiers are what? Getting engaged to each other? To other men? Is that the toughest engagement? Or the toughest thing for a French soldier is getting engaged to a woman because they don't even know how to do that anymore in France. No, he means the toughest engagements, meaning putting French troops on the ground in Ukraine. I make fun of the French. But wouldn't it be ironic, in a very dark way, if it were the French who led the invasion that started World War III? That would be a whole different twist on things than the last couple times anyway. So we'll see. We'll see if the French troops go in. We'll see if the NATO troops go in on the ground. While I was downloading and printing this story about the French troops, this story came across the wire from Breitbart. The European Union, let's see, who is this? The president of the European Council. So is it the European Union, the European Community, the European Council? What? How many different bureaucracies do they have atop Europe, for crying out loud? And who is this guy, and how come I never heard of him before? And how is he the president of something in Europe, and I've never heard of him? Do they have a bunch of minions that are just all in a line that they can just start in? They just roll them out whenever they have propaganda to put out? I don't know. It's very strange. This is the president of the European Council, Charles Michel. And he wrote an op-ed piece in a Belgian newspaper that says, quote, the European Union needs to shift to a war economy. A war economy, says some guy I never heard of who apparently is in charge. They say he runs the convening body of the European Union's leaders. I don't even know what that means. He runs the convening body? What does that mean? That he's in charge of, like, tea and crackers and cookies? And is he in charge of refreshments at the meeting? He runs the convening body of the European Union's leaders? Does he direct parking when they drive up? What does that mean, he runs? Anyway, he says if Russia is not stopped in its invasion of Ukraine, Europe is next. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, so we're not supposed to notice that even before NATO threw its might against the Russian army, that the Russians weren't even able to take eastern Ukraine. They weren't even able to do what they started out to do in eastern Ukraine, yet they threatened all of Europe. That's right. The Russian hordes are going to flow across Europe, and Vladimir Putin is going to conquer Europe. He can't even get out of eastern Ukraine with any self-respect. But nonetheless, European Council runner, I guess, Charles Michel, he says Russia poses a serious military threat to Europe if left unchecked. And he says any dissent on this view means you are just parroting Kremlin propaganda. So if you disagree that the mighty Russian hordes are about to conquer Europe, you're obviously on the Kremlin's payroll. So the Europeans and the Obama minions are So I just talked about the fact that they're willing to flip Congress and pass a law to keep Donald Trump away from the presidency. I think that they're also willing to start World War III in order. And so this is the shell game they're playing, right? So we've got the congressional gambit. Barack Obama sits back and he says, listen, if you'll just give me Congress, we'll pass a law. We'll keep Donald out of the White House and it'll all be clean and easy. If that's not possible, for whatever reason, we'd hate to do this, but World War III is a possibility. And so the congressional gambit is a compromise offered to the Republicans to avoid World War III, and the Republicans would probably take that deal because nobody wants to go to World War III just to keep Donald Trump out of the White House. I mean, not that there aren't people willing and ready to do that. Apparently there are. But most of the Republicans in Congress would be like, well, okay, we'll play ball, Barry, for crying out loud. Do you have to be so serious about everything? And so it's as if the criminally insane sex cult that seized civilization is saying to the Republicans in Congress, they're saying, give us an off-ramp or it's World War III, right? The off-ramp is give us the House before the election, just in case we're not able to cheat big enough in the 2024 election. Although all indications are we will be able to. There's a chance we might not be able to because you just never know what happens. You never know what could happen when the votes start being counted and you think you have every... So this is our insurance policy on the side. World War III. It's just there. We'd hate to go to that, but we're ready to do that if it's necessary. Thank you very much. It's your move. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. It's good to be with you. Enough with politics. Let's move on to things of much more import. Although I suppose this is political to one degree or another. I'll start with the Democrat senator. Democrat senator in Arizona, her name is Eva Birch. And Democrat Senator Eva Birch, she's a state senator in Arizona. She has announced that she is getting an abortion. That's right. She called a press conference, surrounded herself by other baby-killing Democrats, and announced proudly that she is about to go and get an abortion. And she reminded everyone that she is a registered nurse, which means she should know all about abortion. So she claims that her reason for getting this abortion that she's going to do publicly, loudly, and proudly, the reason she's getting this abortion, she says that doctors have determined that my pregnancy is not progressing and is not viable. And so she calls a press conference to tell everyone that she's going to get an abortion. And she's a registered nurse. So a registered nurse should know that when doctors determine that your pregnancy is not progressing, that means they show you an ultrasound where there's no heartbeat. That's what that means. The pregnancy's not progressing is it's a clinically gentle way to say that the baby has died. So anyone who's been through a number of pregnancies would know this because there's a pretty good chance you've heard that once. If you've been through more than three or four pregnancies, that the baby died, unfortunately. It happens. But that's not an abortion. Or I should say that's not getting an abortion. So if the baby dies, there are medical procedures that need to be undertaken in order to ensure the health of the mother. But the baby died. That's not an abortion. And Eva Birch should know. So now she is a nurse, which means she could be stupid enough not to know. We all learned that over COVID, that don't assume just because someone's a medical professional that they're all that bright. But either way, she's lying. And so imagine the craven political gall one must have to use your dead baby as a political prop at a press conference to show everyone how much you care about killing babies and keeping it legal and all of that. I can't comprehend that. When you find out your baby died, you should disappear from public view for quite some time. Even if you're a politician, there should be some sadness and a period of mourning. That's normal. You don't hold a press conference and act like you're getting an abortion so that you can score points for the upcoming election, because the election is the most important election in our lifetime and we have to preserve the right to choose. But here she is, up on the dais. Man. So the guilt over the other babies that Eva Birch has killed must be overwhelming, that she could be this craven. So, you know, the guilt, people respond in interesting ways to guilt. A lot of times they dig their heels in and become more recalcitrant. And so the guilt over the babies that this woman did kill allow her to be so craven that she would use the baby who died as a political prop. And it's just despicable and awful and horrible. And that's on the Democrat side. But the one thing you can say about Eva Birch is that you know where she stands. She is a full-throated baby killer. And she wants baby killing to be legal. And if at all possible, she'll fund it. And if necessary, she'll participate in it. That's how dedicated she is. On the other hand, you have Mark Rubio. Mark Rubio has responded, apparently political strategistette Kellyanne Conway made a statement, and for some reason people listened to her. I'm not sure why anyone has ever listened to this person, but people do. I don't know why. Is she buying them drinks? I don't know how anyone listens to Kellyanne Conway, but she gave advice to the Republicans on abortion policy. A couple of weeks ago, Kellyanne Conway advised Republicans in this heated political season to avoid focusing on Democrat extremism. She said Republicans should stop highlighting Democrat support, a Democrat unfettered support for abortions. She says that we need to stop focusing on abortion. I'm not even a Republican, but well, actually, I might be a registered Republican. I can't remember. But she says that conservatives and people who don't want to kill babies shouldn't focus on the fact that Democrats want to kill all babies all the time. Stop focusing on their extremism, said Kellyanne Conway. And for whatever reason, Marco Rubio felt it necessary to respond to her. And so Marco Rubio, he says that we should. He says Republicans should highlight Democrats' so-called extremism on baby killing. Rubio urged Republicans to engage in a three-pronged approach. That's right, three-pronged, says Mark Rubio. He's playing 3D chess, of course, always, Marco Rubio. He says, number one, fight for a pro-family agenda. Number two, highlight Democrat extremism. And number three, tell the truth about abortion. No, notice telling the truth about abortion comes in number three with Marco. Anyway, that's why Marco Rubio is more despicable than Eva Birch. Because Marco Rubio wants you to think that he knows the truth about abortion, which I think he does. But telling the truth, that comes in third of his three-pronged plan. Here's what Marco Rubio says. Protecting unborn human beings is the moral center and purpose of our movement, he says. So Marco Rubio claims that he is part of the movement to protect unborn human beings. And then he concludes by saying, no pro-life strategy deserves the name without advocating just limits on abortion. Just limits. And so now he could have said just limits, as in implying that limiting some abortions is just. Or he could have said just limits, meaning I don't really want to stop all abortion, just limits. Either way, he's saying the same thing. So Marco Rubio knows the truth. He even says we should tell the truth, and then he lies and says he's pro-life. He's part of the pro-life movement, even though he wants just limits. Well, I guess that does make him part of the pro-life industry. On that note, we go to, this is from our prophecy file. Those of you who are interested in prophecy, I know so many people are. If you're interested in prophecy, we have a little bit right here on the Weekly Worldview. This is fulfilled prophecy. Okay? You ready? Story from the Daily Signal. Planned Parenthood has been caught circumventing abortion law by dismembering babies. That's right. Last week, David DeLeiden of the Center for Medical Progress, again, showed undercover videos at a House hearing full of Republicans, pro-lifers even. He showed videos of officials at the Planned Parenthood headquarters in whichever one, Gulf Coast. Officials describe abortionists who skirt federal law against partial birth abortion by using forceps to pull off the legs of babies so that they can get around the partial birth abortion ban on delivering a certain amount of the legs or killing the baby with a certain amount of the legs exposed. In 2003, the United States Supreme Court handed down a decision that we were told banned partial birth abortion. At the time, Bob Enyart called that decision a manual on how to dismember and kill children legally. And then he read from the decision instructions on how a doctor could avoid violating their ruling, actually advising them how to kill the child. And the decision, the 2003 partial birth abortion ban, actually lists the possibility of removing the legs in order to avoid violating their ruling. Which is exactly what Bob Enyart prophesied would happen. Because of the way this so-called ban was written, it wasn't a ban at all. It was a manual on how to kill children without violating this particular ruling that was used to bamboozle a few million gullible evangelicals who gave about $1 billion to the pro-life industry in order to facilitate now the ripping off of legs so that babies could be killed within the reasonable limits of the law. What I think Mark Rubio would agree would be just limits. Anyway, I'll link to the prophetic page at kgov.com so that you can check it out. So from there, let's come back to something a little less disturbing. Just back to, well, no, we can't. We can't come back to anything less disturbing. Now, we have to finish with the very disturbing, and we finish with Donald Trump. From the Politics and Religion file, Donald Trump said last Sunday on Fox News that Republicans had to include three exceptions to their abortion position if they want to get elected. Don't you want to get elected? Said Don. He said, if you want to get elected, there's three exceptions. Three, rape, incest, life of the mother. It's that simple. And then Donald went on to instruct the folks at Fox News. Don said, you know, if you look at a lot of the civilized world, they have a period of time, you know. But you can't go out 7 months and 8 months and 9 months. If Republicans spoke about it correctly, I think you have to have the three exceptions. The three. You have to have the three exceptions. Rape, incest, life of the mother. It's that simple. I tell people, number one, you have to go with your heart. You have to go with your heart, I tell people. But beyond that, you also have to get elected, okay? And if you don't have the three exceptions, I think it's very hard to get elected. Very hard. Pennsylvania, who was doing pretty well. We had a fellow there in Pennsylvania. He refused to go with the exceptions. I told him the exceptions. Rape, incest, life of the mother. It's simple. I told him the exceptions. He refused. And he lost in a landslide for governor. Nice man. Nice man. Lost in a landslide. You have to go with the exceptions. The number of weeks you want to know. Is everybody, everyone's interested? I will be coming out with a recommendation fairly soon with the number of weeks. We can figure exactly where to divide with the number of weeks. And I think it'll be accepted. And I think, there we go. That's Donald Trump on, he's going to announce when it's appropriate to kill innocent people, at what stage of their life. And he says it'll be accepted, and by the electorate, he might be right. He probably is right. Donald Trump's pretty good at politics. And he knows that the electorate is a bunch of fornicating murderers, for the most part. But will his exceptions and his number of weeks, will that be accepted by God? No, it won't. And any Christian who does not warn Donald J. Trump that his high-handed, prideful attack on God and God's children, it's a tell. Don, that's a tell that you are damned to hell. And you are damned to hell, Don, and I can tell by what you just said. And you need to check yourself and repent and seek God and ask his forgiveness. Because you are damned. You are headed straight to hell. And anyone who doesn't warn Donald J. Trump of this, any Christian, is guilty of Donald Trump's blood. And it might look good on election day. Might look fine. But on judgment day, no, not so much. It's the Weekly Worldview, and I am your host, Doug McBurney. Thank you for sticking with us. So we go from the killing of the innocents and the damning of politicians to hell by gullible evangelicals who think they're doing something good, helping Donald Trump go to hell. That's not good, and it's not going to help the country either, but that's secondary. They should all be ashamed of themselves. Feel free to forward this recording to Donald Trump so that he knows. Don, you're going straight to hell, buddy. I'm happy to take a call and try to help. All right, now let's get on to, this is less disturbing, but it's fairly controversial. We go to the uncivil file. We're going to talk about the Civil Rights Act. I mentioned it a few weeks ago. I probably didn't do it justice, and I want to. And so I had opportunity with this story from the Liberty Daily this week to give my a more full rendering of my opinion regarding the results of the Civil Rights Act, the civil rights movement in general. This is a story. It's an opinion piece about how the civil rights laws have destroyed freedom in the markets in America, and it's interesting. But it reminded me that, you know, the black folks of the 1950s wished that bigoted white people would open up the paths to prosperity that they were walking to black folks. That's what decent, normal black folks in the 1940s and 50s wished. We just want the same opportunities that the white people have. And they were being denied those opportunities by those white people. They had a legitimate beef. Then in the 1960s, civil rights marchers insisted that the government step in and force white people to give equal access to opportunities to people of other races, specifically black people. And so the underlying wish, the underlying desire, it was righteous. But the demand on the government was an erroneous demand. The demand should have instead taken the form of an implicit request present in the individual relationships formed between racially diverse individuals. People who weren't racist on both sides. And the honoring of this request must be understood to be limited by just the tribal nature of man, and limited by the interaction between white and black people, particularly in the churches where these conversations were taking place and would have continued to take place. And then when you combine the tribal nature of people and the inherited bigotry of all of us just growing up and back then not necessarily always knowing better in every case, combine that with the corrupted, sinful state of mankind and overcoming these obstacles to integration are difficult. And they can only be achieved by mutual need or a mutual relationship between people and Jesus Christ, and not by government edict. Integration could be achieved by families, churches, businesses, one at a time, and it would be slow and it would be painful, and there would be a lot of people who felt it wasn't happening fast enough. Of course, that's the nature of human progress. And the church should have informed people and the rulers of all the Western governments of this truth. But by the mid-20th century, the churches and the government had all been infiltrated by leftist and godless communist agitators intent on sowing civil strife. And so they did, and they demanded the government act. And so in 1964, the Civil Rights Act was the government insisting upon what should have been agreed to voluntarily by the people. And because now racial harmony was dictated by the government, the natural process of implementation, instead of free will agreements among people, now it would be lawsuits, by force of law and by lawsuits. And so this article in the Liberty Daily takes us through one of the lawsuits, the lawsuit called Griggs versus Duke Power from 1971, where the Supreme Court ruled that any employment policy or practice that operates to exclude black people is prohibited, notwithstanding the employer's lack of discriminatory intent, meaning the employer didn't even have to be wanting to be racist if any policies they had were judged as limiting access to opportunity for black people. If that was judged as discriminatory by Congress, then it would be declared discriminatory. Congress directed the thrust of the Civil Rights Act to the consequences of employment practices, not simply the motivation. And furthermore, Congress, not the employer, gets to decide. Let's say you have certain tests people have to take to get a job. Well, now Congress would decide if the tests necessary were based on what is described as a common sense approach. Whether or not it was common sense approach. What does that mean? Well, this notion of common sense would be mandated by Congress through the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. And it would be the Equal Opportunity Employment Commission that would ultimately decide if an employer was at, if an employer was at fault. Even if they weren't specifically trying to discriminate, the EEOC could say, but you did, and so you're at fault. So Congress, not the employer, gets to decide. And so the article rightly calls this totalitarian and then notes that what actually happened. Instead of an increase in racial harmony, employers were forced to pad their payroll with quota hires in order to avoid the scrutiny of the EEOC. Quota hires undermine productivity and even safety. And eventually, the sophisticated network of merit and skill that undergird our economy and propel the economy forward, they were all undermined and frayed. And the social fabric was frayed and adulterated with implied liability and mistrust and judgments and quota hires that leads to suspicion, which leads to questioning, which leads to hatred, which leads to violence. The civil rights movement was the diabolical misuse of a legitimate claim of wrong to justify an illegitimate governmental response and reset of cultural norms that undermine the ability of Americans to live and work together toward a more integrated future. I believe that the civil rights movement was satanic and communist. In fact, I'll just call it a satanic communist conspiracy that here now in 2024 is on the verge of the ultimate success of its goal, along with the goals of myriad other satanic and communist plots instigated in the 20th century. The goal is to destroy America, and they're on the verge of doing it, if not taking the next great step toward it. Now, this is definitely not nearly as disturbing or uncomfortable to talk about, although it is alarming. From the widespread propaganda file, the EPA issued rules last week. They say the rules were to curb auto emissions and to bolster the adoption of electric vehicles. This is from Axios.com, which is a bunch of millennial potheads. Axios.com. Axios says, why does it matter, these new EPA landmark rules? They say, here's why it matters. Transportation is the largest source of domestic greenhouse gas emissions. And we're not supposed to question whether or not greenhouse gas emissions mean anything. We're just supposed to be alarmed that, oh my goodness, transportation is the largest source. We better do something about that. I sure am glad the EPA is doing something. Axios reminds us that the rules that were just passed are less stringent than the initial plan. That's right. And administration officials told reporters the final rules provide more flexibility. Oh, that's great. More flexibility. We all want more flexibility. That's right. Axios reports that now car makers may choose to produce 30 to 56% of new light-duty vehicles as battery-powered electric. They may choose to. I mean, there's other ways they could do it, but they could choose to produce electric vehicles, which the EPA already stated that's their goal, is to bolster electric vehicles. Estimates show that consumers, here Axio reminds us, estimates show that consumers would save money by buying a new vehicle based on lower maintenance cost and avoided gas purchases, you know, because all that electricity is free. Mm-hmm. And there's lower maintenance. How do we know? Estimates. We just told you there were estimates. For crying out loud. As everyone knows, you save money by buying a new car. I mean, how else do you save money? Let's see here. I don't know if I can go through any more of this. I've got a quote from John Bozzella, the president and CEO of the Alliance for Automated, the Alliance, I can't even say it, the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Uh-huh. What's that? Nobody knows what that is. Who's he? Nobody knows who he is. He's the CEO of the Alliance for Automotive Innovation. Axios may have made him up on an AI algorithm via ChatGPT for all we know. Because he sounds like, if he works for the auto industry, it sounds like he's been taken hostage. Here's what he says. These EV targets, they're still a stretch, but it should give the market a chance to catch up. It buys some time and gives the Inflation Reduction Act time to do its thing. It's as if they have a gun to his head. Or he's just made up. He's not even real. Who even knows? National Climate Advisor Ali Zeta. Who's that? What is that? What's a National Climate Advisor? Who's he advising? What nation? He says that this gives customers choices. That's right. You'll have choices from plug-in hybrids to fuel cells to fully electric. Drivers have more choices today than ever, says National Climate Advisor Ali, or whoever. It's all made up. You don't even know if these people are real. Ali says, we are moving faster and faster to take on the climate crisis. And that's the really important thing, right? For every millennial and younger reading this article, they feel good at the end because not only do we have more flexibility, more choice, but I'm going to save some money. And I'm going to be able to take on the climate crisis. Who could ask for more? There you go. That's from the widespread propaganda file. I predict that, here, let's get to this. I think, where's my electric vehicle? Hold on here. I have to find it. Here it is. Listen to this. Now, that's the propaganda. Here's the real world. Over in the real world, meanwhile, the CEO of Hertz Rental Cars was fired due to his irresponsible vast purchase of an entire fleet of electronic vehicles that the company later found out nobody wants to rent. And so Hertz had to sell their enormous fleet of electric cars, because nobody wanted to rent them. And now Hertz is in trouble and they fired the CEO. And they had to sell these cars into a market now where consumers are less and less interested in buying electric cars. But the CEO of Hertz, his decision to bet everything on the EV boom, according to Zero Hedge, was highly praised at the time. Hertz was even recognized by the White House for that's right, for efforts to expand access to electric vehicles. We didn't need more access. We didn't want them. You can provide all the access you want. If people don't want them, they don't want them. Access is never the problem. That's right. He said, we're here to help our consumers. Here's what he said. We're here to help our customers electrify their travels. And then he found out what people are not looking for on their travels is electrification. They're looking for a reliable way to get from point A to point B. And they don't need anything electrifying in their travels. There's already enough going on. Thank you very much. And so he's been fired. And my prediction is that the hideously ugly electric vehicles, I don't know why they make them so ugly, but they do. And if you try to tell me different, you're wrong. And you'll be proven wrong by history. These incredibly ugly, stupid-looking electric vehicles of the early 2000s will be looked at in the not-too-distant future like that incredibly bad haircut or outfit from the 1970s. And everybody will just be like, ha, look at this. What were we thinking? Can you believe I drove that? I mean, I drove it for a little while and then...
You didn't.
Oh, I didn't, no. But people will say, yeah, I had one of those. Uh-huh. This would be like the plaid trousers with the really high pockets. And like that. All right, now we go, as we close, to the science, really, file, where the Manhattan Contrarian reports on what he calls the greatest scientific fraud of all time. That's right, the climate crisis. Sea level rise is the particular subject. The author at Manhattan Contrarian says, regarding the narrative of impending catastrophic global warming. He says no other scientific fraud in world history comes close to this one in scope or significance, he says, of the climate crisis fraud. And I certainly agree that it is a significant fraud and that it is a fraud and that it is deleterious in its scope and its significance, but it is not the greatest scientific fraud of all time. The greatest scientific fraud of all time goes to the theory of Darwinian evolution. In fact, without Darwinian evolution, the climate hoax would be impossible. You couldn't have pulled it off. Because before Darwinian evolution, people believed God. Number one, they believed that God existed. And number two, they believed it when he said that he could control the weather and that he would be the one who would destroy the world. And then they read about how he said he would destroy the world and they thought, I don't really want to be a part of that. And that led them to, instead of worrying and freaking out and feeling like they were destroying the world, they realized that God was upset with sin in the world and that God was going to destroy the world, and it caused them to think about their own sin and to look further into what God said, and they found out that God said that he sent his son so that his son could pay the price for the sin of the world, and if you would believe in his son, that you could be forgiven of your sin so that you didn't have to feel like you were personally responsible for destroying the world. You could know that you were just responsible for your own sin, and if you were willing to humble yourself and ask for forgiveness, that God was willing to forgive you and there was a way. And then you wouldn't have to be a part of that whole destruction of the world thing that God ensured everyone who used to believe that was coming. And so because the greatest scientific fraud of all time, the theory of Darwinian evolution, was promoted and adopted, now the climate crisis was a relatively simple enveloping move there on the battlefield of ideas and all of that. All right, so do we have anything else? Oh, speaking of quota hires and climate crisis, down in Johannesburg, South Africa, Soweto and Johannesburg are for the most part without water these days. South Africa has suffered persistent electricity shortages for several years as a result of poor management, cronyism, corruption, and the loss of skilled engineers and managers. The African National Congress has been running Africa since the end of apartheid in 1994. So they kicked out all the colonialist racists and descended into pretty much what the white colonial racists found when they got there. It's pretty much the law of the jungle in South Africa. South Africa is a monument to England's fall from grace. Had England continued in the faith of the God that they honored, they would still rule the world, and South Africa would still be the jewel in their crown, and the people in Johannesburg and Soweto would still have access to water reliably. And that's it for the Weekly Worldview this week. Should the Lord tarry, we'll return next. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.